If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here in Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined as always when we do the Power Slam podcast by Finn Martin. Hey Finn, how you doing?
Yeah, it's been a sobering week, hasn't it, Kenny? To see what's come out in the wrestling business.
Yeah, it's been a bit intense. Now we are going to get into, you know, the usual wrestling news and reviews and stuff like that, but before that, of course, we're going to talk about the big story, which has kind of plagued British wrestling primarily, but also over in the States as well. So I thought, Finn, that maybe the best idea, in case somebody's been living under a rock, was to kind of just give a summary of the broad strokes of what's happened, and we can have a quick conversation about it.
Yes.
So essentially last week, David Starr, the American wrestler who I think lived in the UK, and he was OTT champion and all this kind of stuff, try to unionize pro wrestling. A story had come out by an ex-girlfriend of his talking about that he had been predatory towards her during their relationship in some ways, and there was some abuse that took place. He then posted a status up on his Twitter account where he said that he hadn't been a predator, but he had been, in his words, a cunt to her in various ways, and he'd been seeing a therapist and all that kind of stuff. And then a second ex-girlfriend of his, or someone who'd had relations with him, also came out, and you would think that was the story, right? Like, that was going to be the story. It was David Starr and what had happened, and a lot of promotions who he was championed for, like OTT and TNT in Liverpool, stripped him of the title, said they weren't going to work with him anymore.
Yeah.
And then, essentially, over the full weekend, over a period of 4 days, there was a lot of very brave men and women and trans people who spoke out about abuse that they'd received in the wrestling business. If you've not seen it, if you go on Twitter and use the hashtag speaking out, that's where all the stories were kind of under. And the stories accused a lot of WWE NXT UK performers like Liguero, Joe Coffey, Travis Banks, Jordan Devlin. There was people in the States accused, like Joey Ryan. Jim Cornette was accused of some behavior with his wife. There was it kind of spiraled. Will Ospreay, and all of the kind of accusations, you know, ranged from sexual assault to inappropriate comments and kind of the whole spectrum in between. And what's kind of come out of it is some companies have taken action on pro wrestlers that they have let go. But just kind of broadly, I guess, Finn, I mean, you've worked in wrestling a long time. I've been around wrestling a long time. I mean, I don't want to speak for you. I mean, you always hear stories of, like, you know, a kind of sleazy element of wrestling. But I think that for a lot of us, seeing these stories and reading them, I certainly just did not realize anywhere near how bad it was, and kind of felt quite guilty that I didn't realize how bad it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people in the business as well have come out and, you know, expressed shock. I think some people obviously will have known certain things or heard rumors, but a lot of people, like, for instance, Candice LeRae, she put out a statement, didn't she, about Joey Ryan. And she had worked with him and had known him for a long time. And she was just astounded by it and obviously appalled as well. But did you see that statement that she put out?
Yeah, she had no idea that any of that had gone on. And she obviously teamed with Joey Ryan. And yeah. I mean, it's worth noting that of all the people who have been accused of things, Joey Ryan is probably the worst of the accused in terms of, I think we're up to 15 allegations on him specifically, and we're talking pretty serious sort of assault accusations are what's been put out there by a lot of females in wrestling. And you know, to show that Candice LeRae is someone that for a long period of time was close to him and had no idea what was going on, that shows you kind of how deep, I guess, some of this stuff was.
That's right. So, I mean, I think there's probably, there may be a feeling out there among some that, well, everyone must have known. Well, no, because this is going on between, like, a one person who is, using his power to you know, basically abuse somebody who's further down the food chain from him, and thinking that he can get away with it. And this is not something that's talked about openly. You know, this is something that was going on when it's just one-on-one basis, with people feeling that, you know, this abuse of power, and they're really taking advantage of people. And that's why people who are on their level wouldn't try and approach them. They wouldn't try this on with them. It's usually with people who are, you know, open close quote, further down the food chain than they are. So, and therefore look up to them, or don't have the power that they have in a particular organization.
Fear of speaking up, that if you speak up, that you would be blackballed or not able to get an opportunity.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that's the difference there. So, I mean, it is absolutely believable to me that Candice LeRae would not have been aware of this, because Joey Ryan is obviously not going to have bragged about this to her. So she's been in this position where she's worked with Joey Ryan for years and has expressed, you know, shock and outrage at these revelations about him. But it's, yeah, lots of people in wrestling will have had no knowledge, certainly, that any of this was going on to this extent. You know, they may have heard rumors about certain things, but I can believe that lots of people would not have had sort of any knowledge that this behavior was going on, and, you know, certainly not to this level. And, you know, each time you're almost afraid, really, Kenny, to go online, because each time you go on Twitter or social media, something else comes out, and you're just like, you know, what's, and it's just, it just seems to be never ending. And we're only 3 or 4 days into this now. This could go on for a very long time to go, very long time to come. You know, and if there's more stuff out there, it needs to come out. You know, these people need to come forward, or at least if they feel they can. You know, it's up to them. You know, it's their choice, of course. It's not up to me to tell someone what to do. But,
and I think there's also a, you know, I think that what I've been trying to do, and I think a lot of people that I know have been trying to do, is you read stuff and you listen. That's all you really can do, because, you know, there's people who I've worked with who I've read and heard stuff about. And, you know, initially when I was reading some stuff, I was in my mind going, the person was, you know, naively going, well, the person was always nice to me. But of course they would be nice to me. There's no reason for a person not to be nice to me. And I think that the fact that people were speaking up is a process that I think has to happen for things to change. And, you know, wrestling needs to be better than this. And I think that this is probably the first step to making that happen. But yeah, it's just a really intense situation that's been going on. I think that, and this is just me speaking, I'm not speaking for Finn or anybody else here, I think that what is going to happen is that because there's, like I said at the beginning, there's a scale of accusations, right? From the very serious, sort of really bad end of it, of like full assault, to inappropriate comments, which are still bad, but obviously wouldn't be treated the same way legally as something else. So I think that what has to be done is things need to be taken on a case by case basis, in terms of, you know, it's, you know, I know that some people are going to the police about people who have, you know, they've accused and stuff like that. That absolutely should happen if that has happened to you. Maybe in other situations, it's a case where somebody needs to sort of put their hands up and say, I made an inappropriate comment. I really fucked up and I need to learn from that. And that person needs to go and rehabilitate and come back later on. So I think it's going to be a case by case in a lot of these situations. But I think that one thing I've noticed in the last kind of couple of days is that to people who have been accused, who have been issuing apologies on Twitter, I've been quite disappointed with a lot of the apologies, because it tends to be quite half-arsed in the way that it's communicated. And I think that's just something that's not really going to fly. I saw somebody the other day refer to this as like wrestling's version of the Me Too movement. I think it is in some ways, because, you know, this is now, you know, a different environment. But wrestling, you know, before has been a boys' club, but it needs to be better. You know, we've seen, you know, even Alex Shane has had to resign from his positions at WrestleTalk because of accusations towards him. So this is going far and wide. But I think that we can agree that it's a good thing that people are feeling brave enough to speak out if something has happened to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just a couple of points I'd like to make. I mean, I think, you know, obviously these wrestlers have you know, wrestlers have done this to the business. You know, it's up to the wrestlers as well as the companies as well to let it be known to their peers. You know, this from the top down, but really I think the wrestlers as well need to get it together and let people know in their industry that this type of behavior, this abuse of power and really exploitation of people subordinate to them will no longer be tolerated. You know, we've all seen people in wrestling treat people poorly, you know, in all sorts of different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just, you know, people taking advantage of their celebrity and thinking they can get away with things because, you know, the other people, you know, the people who they have power over won't be believed. You know, I think, you know, I think this will change things. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the drug culture in wrestling. That's changed really over the last 15 years. You know, pill abuse, I think, was prevalent 15 years ago. It really isn't now. Obviously, it still goes on. But we know it's changed because fewer wrestlers are losing their jobs, entering rehab, and you know, more people are still with us happily. But, I mean, that's changed. That whole culture of drugs has changed. And I think this can change as well. And I think it will because people, you know, people have spoken out. They've been very brave, very courageous. And I applaud them for doing that. It must be incredibly difficult. And many people have stated that, you know, I'm sure I'll speak for Kenny here. I mean, you've really done, you know, you've done the right thing here, speaking out about these things. Mm-hmm. They now know and people in future will know that their voices will be heard. You know, if things like this happen in future, if anyone speaks out about it, they will know that their voices will be heard. Now, this knowledge has been implanted in the minds of everyone in the business now, and any, you know, perpetrators that have done things previously or maybe thinking of it. You know, it means that people will be heard, they'll be believed, and that you will be, you know, you will not be able to get away with this. But I definitely do think that this is something that the business needs to get together on this one and just, you know, it needs to be industry wide really to just let it be known that this is not, this, you know, this cannot be tolerated anymore. And I mean, the public has expressed its, you know, revulsion at these revelations. The public has let the business know that it needs to change. And the business needs to listen and it needs to act, Kenny. You know, and not just management, obviously management are going to play a part, but I think the talent in the locker room as well. I mean, everyone can play the part in this. And obviously this is an industry where, you know, people don't like whistleblowing. There's a lot of industries, not just wrestling, that are very much like that, where people won't rat each other out. But it's like, you know, this is, you know, these things that have happened should not be happening. And people in the business, if they're aware of this, they should be taking steps to stamp this out. You know, they should be acting. They shouldn't just be burying their heads in the sand and pretending it's not going on or pretending, well, it's nothing to do with me because I'm not doing it. You know, this is something that you as a wrestling person need to speak out on as well to, you know, edify the business, to uphold, you know, to improve the moral code of the business, which right now is as, you know, as bad as it was in 1991 when we had the original sex scandal. So, you know, this is, you know, I was expecting a scandal, you know, I was expecting it to be a racism one. I was not expecting this, but I'm, you know, I'm glad these things have come out and the business needs to change, Kenny.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, that the people who have been accused, like I say, who have come out and sort of issued sort of half-arse apologies and sort of that's not going to get us anywhere. I think people are going to really demand that if you've done something or if you've admitted to something, that you need to be able to fully change, you know. And I mean, even, you know, to kind of pivot a little bit, it's kind of semi-involved in this situation, but it came out yesterday, I think it was, sorry, 2 days ago, late Sunday night, someone had found a clip of Sammy Guevara on a podcast in 2016, and he just had a tryout with WWE, and I think he was in a very moronic way trying to say that he found Sasha Banks really attractive, and he said, you know, I would rape that woman. That was the line he'd said in the podcast. And he came out yesterday and apologized and said that he was an idiot, and I think he spoke to Sasha and she put a statement out basically saying she's spoken to him, she hopes that he learns from it, and that sort of behavior can't be tolerated. And AEW have now suspended Sammy without pay, and his pay is going to go to a women's shelter in Jacksonville. You know, is this something you think we're going to see more of, and probably should see more of, that if somebody is seen to be making these kind of comments or something like that, that there needs to be a period of rehabilitation that happens, rather than it just being kind of, you know, slap on the wrist and move on?
I mean, I think it depends. It's a case-by-case basis, really, and it depends on the severity of that, and it depends on the company, and it's very difficult, really, isn't it? A lot of people would say that Sammy should be fired for this, and he's been suspended by AEW. He stated, didn't he, that he'll never forgive himself for what he said. I mean, the thing is, this is going to follow him around for a long time, possibly for the rest of his career. And this is going to be brought up again and again. So he is going to be punished for this. I mean, it's up to AEW, really, whether or not they bring him back. I think it's going to be difficult for them to bring him back. I think it really is going to be difficult, just given the attention and just the understandable outrage from everyone following this, and lots of people in the wrestling business as well are absolutely appalled by what they've seen. I mean, I've seen people just quitting the business, just don't want to be involved in it anymore. Put statements out, that's it, I'm through. I just don't want to be around this industry anymore. People are just unable to watch it anymore, you know, which is understandable. I mean, when you think of those people who you previously looked up to, and then you read these, you know, these revelations about them, it's really hard to not look at the entire business and not really. I mean, it's a massive stain on the entire business, this, isn't it? And it's very difficult. It's very difficult to look at it the same way. And it's very difficult to sort of view a person the same way after they've said something like what Sammy Guevara said. It's a tough one. I think it's going to be a tough one to bring him back after that. Really difficult.
Yeah.
It's going to be really difficult for AEW to bring him back. I mean, maybe they can. I mean,
I hope that if he, you know, he's going to sort of rehabilitation. I mean, I do believe in rehabilitation so I think that if he is able to go and sort of, I think, you know, the comparison that I think you can kind of make a little bit is that, you know, there's a reason that a lot of people still have not been able to accept Hulk Hogan again. And it's because even though he has sort of said sorry, it sounds like he said sorry that he got caught rather than he said sorry for what he did. And I think that you can see from when Hogan has turned up, it shows that the reaction level for him is nowhere near what it used to be 6-7 years ago. And I think that's because he's never really seemed to own up to what he did and really make a move to change things. You know,
I don't think he ever really grasped the significance of it. I just don't think he ever has.
No, and because if he did, you know, would he not be going to, you know, go to like a black youth group and sort of get them to explain to you what that word means to them when they're called that by a white person or whatever? And, you know, there was none of that that happened. And I think that that's why, in my eyes, if someone is able to, if you can see real sort of like ownership of what they did and they've changed, I think there should be a second chance. Because I think if there's not, you know, what are we doing? You know, you can't just banish everybody who does a bad thing to an island and, you know, never use them again. And I think with Sammy, I'm not defending Sammy. It was a bad thing that he said. I think he was, I don't think he meant it in the way that it said. It's a horrible thing to say, and he absolutely needs to be sort of, there needs to be consequences for him. But I think that I hope that there's rehabilitation. I think there is for him, and I hope that he's able to turn it into some positive down the line. You know, maybe, you know, he can go to sort of trauma groups and sort of listen to some survivors of stuff or victims of stuff and see how they feel and get something out of it. And there's a potential for growth. So hopefully that gets to happen.
I mean, the best thing I can say about him is at least his apology has seemed genuine and sincere. Whereas a lot of these statements that have been put out have actually exacerbated the situation for them. And they're putting these long statements out on Twitter, various wrestlers. And you just think, why have you put that statement out? You know, you would have been far better saying nothing. We actually think less of you now than we did before you put that statement out, in which you haven't taken responsibility for your actions. You haven't shown any remorse at all, really, or very little. And you just mostly just seem angry that you've been caught. And that seems to have been the mood and the thrust of some of the statements that have been put out. And I think you feel the same way about that, Ken.
Yeah, 100%.
And that there just angers people more. And it's like you've just not accepted the gravity of what you've done here and how bad this is. You know, I mean, we've all done things in our past that we regret, and you know, but we need to atone for them things. Absolutely, we do. And you know, it's just like that's the start of the process. And for a lot of these people, they're not even at the starting point yet, where they've even accepted what they've done. I will say, at least Sammy is there. He's at the starting line, you know, on the road to redemption. So I'll absolutely give him that. There's a lot of others who aren't.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who've done more egregious things who are not even willing to be half as apologetic as he is, which is
That's right. Ridiculous. Yeah, and the thing is, it's also raw now. I mean, you know, it's hard to know how we're going to feel in 3 or 6 months' time. You know, the Hogan thing, it's like nearly, I think it's 5 years. Was it 5 years? July 15, I think it was.
Yeah, July 2015.
It's 5 years on and it's still following him around. And I think I've said this before on this podcast. I have no idea why Hogan has not sorted this out, has not found a way of doing what he needs to do to at least make people believe that he's apologetic about it and that he accepts that, you know, using that word was absolutely wrong, and he should never have said it, and he needs to bloody repent for it. So, it's been quite a week for the business, and you know, as I said, you know, huge round of applause to everyone who's come forward with these. It must be very difficult for them. They've been very brave, and. You know, they've done a great service to themselves and to others.
So yeah, that's kind of our conversation on it. Let's move on to the wrestling news. So before we talk about some of the TV that's happened, chapter 5 of the Undertaker's Last Ride documentary happened on Sunday, where he essentially said he is done and said that the Boneyard match is the best way for him to go out. He can't really see a scenario where he'd want to come back. Were you surprised that he sort of said that he thinks he's done? Do you believe him? What do you think of his statement?
Well, I mean, we've been here before. We were here in 17, weren't we, when he left his hat in the ring after the Roman Reigns match. So that was 2017, wasn't it? The Roman Reigns match, WrestleMania. And we all thought that was it. He was through. He was retiring. He would never wrestle again. And 3 years on, he had the match. We just seen him have a match. Well, it was in April, wasn't it, when it was broadcast at WrestleMania. So it's, you know, 2.5 months ago now. It's really hard for me to believe that's it, because I think he did tack on the end of it that, you know, if Vince needs me or if something interesting presents itself, then I may entertain it. I don't think he said absolutely no, that's it, I'm through, never again. He didn't say that. It was more a sort of, he didn't seem 100% certain that that was it. So I don't know. I mean, I hope, we talked about this after WrestleMania, didn't we? Mm-hmm. You know, we said, I know I said, I hope that's it for him, because the Boneyard match was very well put together. He looked like the Undertaker of old. He won the match. You know, he looked like a star. He looked like sturdy, formidable, all these different things that he hadn't looked in previous matches, you know, due to the power of, you know, it seemed to me to be a pretty good performance, regardless of the editing. I mean, if he'd looked terrible, I mean, his movements and everything were all very believable. And it was, you know, partly due to the power of editing, but also partly because of the style of the match and his performance. He seemed to be in really good shape. To me, that's the way he needs to leave it. What is the point of coming back again? And I think he has talked about this in other episodes, hasn't he? He's like, you know, I can't leave it like that. And, you know, we watched that episode, didn't we, where he had the Reigns match, then he had the surgery, and it took him it took him many months, didn't it, before he could sit there and watch the match.
The following January, I think it was.
Following January, that's right. So it took him like 9 months before he could watch the match, because he knew it was a poor performance that was way below his standards and way below what he wanted to do at WrestleMania in the main event against a performer of Roman Reigns' caliber. You know, given the occasion, he knew it should have been better. So he didn't want to watch the match back. So I can understand that. And yet he came back anyway. And I think really with this year's WrestleMania, he got it right there. So why risk screwing that up by coming back again? So I don't know whether that's it for him. I hope it is, because I think that was the way he should leave it, the Boneyard match. And he said repeatedly, you know, I don't want to be that guy. You know, he said that in episode one of The Last Ride. I don't want to be that guy that people look at and say, oh, wow, you know, he used to be really something. And he was still really something in that Boneyard match. So I hope that's it, Kenny. What do you think?
Yeah, I hope that's it as well. I get the idea that, like, you know, maybe he wanted to have his last match in front of a crowd, in front of a stadium and all that kind of stuff. And I do get it. But watching the five chapters of The Last Ride, it's been continuously he's searching for the satisfying ending. And he'd never found it. And finally, he's satisfied. He got to look like, you know, the badass Undertaker. He got to ride off into the sunset with, you know, some people said the best match of WrestleMania weekend. So why would you mess with that? I think the risk to mess with that is so high. And I think if he does mess with it, what will end up happening is he will have to go down another couple of years of trying to find the being satisfied. And will he ever be able to find it again? I don't know if you can find that again. Even if he was to get in the ring with AJ Styles in a stadium, there's no guarantee that that's going to work. So I think he'd be sort of chasing the dragon there. And I think it's better to, you know, in terms of perfect endings, you can't really write much better than what he had in that Boneyard match.
No, I don't think so. But I think a lot of this as well is, does he want it? You know, does he want to get back in the ring? You know, does he have something to replace wrestling? You know, he's obviously with Michelle and they've got two young kids. I think it's two kids. Is it two young kids they've got?
Yeah, so they've got two little girls.
Yeah, they've got two young kids. And it's just like, well, you know, I think he's just signed a new contract with Vince. He's not struggling for money. You know, there's lots of things he can do that don't involve wrestling. I mean, is that enough to fill a void? You know, that wrestling might leave in his life when he's not performing anymore, or the knowledge that he won't perform again. And that's the thing, isn't it? And for some people, it's very difficult to walk away and not wrestle again. And sometimes I think the company has got to make that decision for them. So I'm hoping in this case, it's not just that, you know, the Undertaker's not going to get in the ring again or doesn't want to get in the ring again. Vince is going to say to him, you are not wrestling again. Very much like with Ric Flair. Because Flair, after his retirement in 2008 at WrestleMania 24, Vince never allowed him to wrestle again, did he?
No, that was it. Never again.
So obviously he wrestled in Australia and then he did, you know, he continued with TNA up until September 2011, his last match. But Vince would never allow him to wrestle again. I think he did do one physical sort. It wasn't a match. It was like a fight that started backstage and I think ended up in the ring, but it was not an official match. But he's, you know, Vince would, that's it, Rick, as far as we're concerned, you are through as a wrestler. So I think Vince needs to make that statement to The Undertaker and they both need to stick to it. And if that happens, I think they'll both be happier because they'll know what their future is, and their future is that The Undertaker is retired. You know, that's definitely the way it should be. I mean, again, you know, look at Shawn Michaels. We thought he was retired in 2010, didn't we?
And then he came back for Crown Jewel.
And then he came back, which was, that was November 2018, wasn't it?
It was,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so that was like more than 8.5 years later. So, you know, that was always the one that, you know, you could point to and say, Sean, he went out on top, never came back. You know, Sean was the guy who was he was the one, the standard bearer of, you know, scruples and morals in pro wrestling. And then he screwed it all up by coming back. But yeah,
they always do, Finn. They always do.
But I mean, Undertaker's already been there several times with the fake retirements and then coming back. So anyway, I know all about fake retirements, don't I, Kenny? And I'm back.
Okay, so let's move on to SmackDown and Raw. Pretty eventful shows over the weekend. We had on SmackDown AJ Styles' big celebration when he was the new Intercontinental Champion with all the wrestlers around the ring and him kind of, you know, making fun of them, making Bryan congratulate him and put the belt around his waist. But he gets interrupted by Matt Riddle, SmackDown's new superstar, and that leads to a non-title Riddle and AJ match where Matt Riddle wins and gets a big win over the IC champ. What did you make of the celebration and how hard they sort of put Riddle over in the first night?
Yeah, I thought it was very well done. I mean, yeah, Renee Young introduced AJ Styles for the Intercontinental title presentation. Styles didn't want Renee to present him with the title belt. He wanted Daniel Bryan to do it. Daniel Bryan's at ringside. Most of the locker room's at ringside. Daniel Bryan almost cracked up with the camera on him. You can see he really is so amused by AJ Styles. So Bryan got in the ring and Bryan's suggesting to Styles that he'd be a fighting champion and defend against Shorty G and Big E and all these other people. You know, and Styles didn't seem that keen. And then Matt Riddle came out and, Riddle said to Styles, you know, I understand you're the face that runs the place, you know, but I'm the bro that's going to run the show. And then Styles nailed him and Riddle made a comeback, almost knocked Styles out of the ring. And then that led to a match. We initially thought it was going to be a title match, a Intercontinental title defense against Matt Riddle. But Styles has said, no, the title is not on the line. But they had like a non-title match. I thought it was very well done. And Riddle won with the Broderick, which always amuses me, the name of that move, Kenny.
It doesn't look that impactful as a finish. It's not. But yeah, I mean, it was good. I think the thing, Riddle is a pretty decent character, and I think that putting him in with AJ first is a good idea. I think it's decent. AJ's a riot as the heel IC champ. Like he's really funny. So yeah, it was a good debut for Riddle. He was treated like a star.
Absolutely. I mean, with all the wrestlers at ringside, they were providing more noise along with the people behind the perspex. There was a confrontation at ringside between Riddle and King Corbin. And I was thinking, is Corbin going to get involved? Will he cause Riddle to lose by count out? I didn't think Riddle was going to score the pin. I was surprised by that. But that is the way to bring someone in and make an impact with them. This is something that WWE needs to do. I mean, I think we were talking last week about, it didn't seem like they were really in any great hurry to create new stars, you know, and they shoved that one in my face, didn't they, Kenny? with this outcome here. No, when I mentioned the Broderick's, obviously mentioned it. That's obviously named after Bo Derek, who was it was a big star, you know, kind of before Matt Riddle was born. So that's just amuses me that he's named a move after her.
Was she big in the 70s?
She was not much of an actress. If you look her up, she had numerous Golden Raspberry nominations. She was actually a pretty lousy actress, but she was in a movie called 10, which was very famous movie. I think it came out in 1979, which was like a sex comedy, and it was a huge movie at the time. And she was an international superstar as a result of that film. But it just amuses me that somebody who was, you know, a huge star before Matt Riddle was even born, and he's named a move after her. That just amuses me.
Yeah, well, and he had a great night, and the Broderick was the thing that got him his big win.
So I mean, they really put him over, and I mean, he couldn't have asked for any more, could he, Matt Riddle from WWE? I was surprised, and actually, you know, really heartened by the way in which he was presented here. This is how you get a new guy over.
And so big celebration out after the match, you know.
Absolutely,
people
really
cheering him on. They did a promo. Mandy Rose was on Miz TV with Miz and Morrison, and it basically led to Mandy and Sonya having this kind of back and forth promo. This was one of the first times where I kind of felt like we were just getting a repeat of what we've had before, you know, because there's not really much more meat in the story now, and I think they need something to happen soon, because the idea here was that Sonya Deville was saying, you know, what do I need to do to get your the opportunities you get? You know, do I need to look like you? And this is all kind of stuff we've heard before. So I don't really know if we're leading to a big Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville grudge match, maybe Extreme Rules with a stipulation, but this was the first time where I kind of watched a Mandy and Sonya thing, and even though they performed it really well, I don't feel like the material was really there to back them up this week. What did you think?
Yeah, it feels like it's gone as far as it can go. And they were on Miz TV with Miz and John Morrison. They did acknowledge their loss to Braun Strowman. They blamed it on the rule change prior to the match. I mean, it was just made very clear here that Miz and John Morrison will not be facing Braun Strowman again. So that was a relief. And then they introduced Mandy. They were pretty rotten to her. She was going to leave. Then Sonya Deville came out. Rose said that she was, done with Deville. Rose said that she was done with Deville. Sonya basically made it clear that she was resentful of Mandy's push. You know, Sonya said that Mandy was a loser who had said nothing of consequence. I mean, the only thing she'd done really of note lately was make out with Otis by a swimming pool. So I thought I was quite amused by that, I've got to say. And then Sonya's trying to work out why Mandy has received this big push and all this publicity and she hadn't. And the answer was clear, because Mandy looks like Mandy and Sonya doesn't look like Mandy. So we had like that resentment there. Presumably this will lead to a match at Extreme Rules, which needs, as you say, this feud needs to end and they need to go off and do something else. I'm not quite sure where it all goes for Sonya after this. And that's a shame. She seems to me like she's going to be the one that's going to lose out here. I think Mandy's going to win the climactic match. And I'm not quite sure what Sonya does next. So it kind of sounded to me like there's a little bit of desperation in Sonya's voice, as if she knows how this story is going to end. Because, I mean, Mandy's obviously, as far as WWE is concerned, Mandy's more marketable than Sonya Deville. And that's almost like wrapped up in this storyline here, isn't it? That's worked in, that's baked into this storyline. So I'm not sure where Sonya goes after this feud, but it does, I mean, it's definitely lost steam, it's lost momentum. They're trying to jack this thing back up, trying to give this like a turbo boost to make it relevant again in time for Extreme Rules. Hopefully they can, hopefully they'll really have a match that causes WWE to view Sonya. I'm not saying they don't view her as a talented and capable in-ring performer, but I'm not convinced that WWE views her as someone who can be a star if she's not attached to Mandy Rose. See what I mean, Kenny?
Yeah. No, and time will tell if she's able to. I mean, I think they could do well with being separated brand-wise. You know, yes. Mandy and Sonya being separate brands would probably be a good way to go.
Yeah, I would say so as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. Are you in any way intrigued? We saw the New Day get a win over Lucha House Party, Lindsay Dorado and Gran Metalik, but really Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro were the story of the match because they attacked the New Day afterwards. Are you excited about a New Day versus Cesaro and Nakamura feud?
Ecstatic, Kenny.
I love that me asking that question. It sounds like I'm being sarcastic. Because, like, what do you say?
What do you say?
Who cares?
It feels like we've been here before many times. Just feels like there's not much going on in the tag team division right now. We never mentioned, have we, that the Forgotten Sons have disappeared.
Almost like Jackson Riker put his foot in it.
Yes. So they've gone. So their push is kaput. I imagine...
You got to feel sorry for Wesley Blake and Steve Cutler, because they're guys who'd really worked hard to get to the main roster with Jackson Riker, and again, this is not a political thing, but Jackson Riker was really getting on the side of being right and wrong in opinions, in terms of racism, and he's cost them a spot on the show, and I feel really bad for them, because if you're in that team with him, what can you do? You can say all you want that we don't share the same views as him, but they're lumped in with him. So I'd be surprised if we see the Forgotten Sons back as an act. I think they're going to get either split or repackaged. If I was Blake or Cutler, I would be wanting to kind of get out of Dodge in that one.
Well, I mean, Jackson Ryker wasn't wrestling, was he, as part of the team? He was just at ringside.
So, yeah, I mean, he was, yeah.
They can just split these, you know, keep Blake and Cutler together, push them as a team, and Jackson Ryker, they can release him or do whatever they're going to do. I mean, it seems to me like he's finished in WWE. Maybe he's not, I don't know. But, I mean, the outlook does not appear bright for him. So, I mean, I don't see why Blake and Cutler should be punished for...
You know, it's going to be difficult for Ryker. You know, how do you bring Ryker back to a locker room where you've got, you know, guys like the New Day who are going to really question,
I don't see how he can. I mean, I just don't see how he can be brought back. But I think, to me, Blake and Cutler, as far as I know, it was Ryker.
They both publicly basically said we do not share the same views as him. So.
Okay, well, I mean, those two should be protected, and I think WWE has a moral obligation here to let it be known that these two are not going to be tarnished due to a teammate's comments on social media. So I think, you know, I feel like WWE really needs to step in here and do the right thing, and I think, you know, absolutely it does, because why should they be stigmatized as a result of what someone else has written? Just because on screen they're part of the same act, they absolutely shouldn't. And they need to be, in my opinion, brought back and given a chance. You know, it's, to me, that's not on at all, Kenny. Absolutely.
Yeah. Not time will tell, see what they do.
But I mean, the tag team division on SmackDown right now feels so thin, doesn't it? It just feels like it's on in rerun mode. I mean, Morrison and Miz are kind of, they've been greatly diminished by the Braun Strowman feud. So it's hard. I mean, I know they will. I mean, we saw it obviously with Miz in the match with Bray Wyatt back in December, wasn't it? At the December
pay-per-view,
where he was basically treated like a nobody. So he was able to rebound from that. He was able to recover from that in the team with Morrison. But I mean, I haven't seen Miz and Morrison just lose without really mounting too much resistance at all to Braun Strowman, a backlash. I mean, it's hard to really see them as tag team title contenders anymore. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do next. As we said last week, this is what happens when you push an act beyond its station. They go from being effective and useful and valuable to being a bit of a joke. So, the tag team division right now needs some assistance, Kenny.
It needs a lot of assistance. But speaking of Braun Strowman, he does come out later on because we get a Firefly Funhouse segment where Bray Wyatt talks about, you know, he's been doing TikTok moves and learning how to knit and all this kind of stuff. And then Ramblin' Rabbit shows up and talks about him losing to Braun Strowman. They show the highlights. Strowman then comes out in the arena. Wyatt's giving him a thumbs down sign. Strowman's saying, you know, that's it. This story to me is over. And then Wyatt says, our story's just getting started, and turns into the old Swamp Bray Wyatt, the Follow the Buzzards Bray Wyatt. He talks about how he created Strowman. He's going to destroy him. He needs to follow the buzzards. Then he holds up the lantern and says, run, and blows it out, which ends the show. So it seems that we're going to get another incarnation of Bray Wyatt taking on Braun Strowman Extreme Rules. What do you make of bringing back this other version of Bray Wyatt to keep the story going?
Never mind that. More importantly, what about Braun single-handedly bringing back the mullet?
Braun's hair here is one of the worst hairstyles I have seen in a long time. He looks dreadful.
Yes. And the thing is, a lot of these people are still getting to hairdressers. I don't know how they're doing it. I mean, maybe they're open in America. You know, they're not open here yet. Going to be open in England from July 4th, Kenny. Just think, you'd be able to go south of the border for a haircut.
You'll be their first day to get your hair cut if that happens.
I don't know when they're going to open in Scotland, but they're opening in England from July the 4th.
It seems to be weird, about 3 weeks behind England. So.
Oh, you're going to be able to last that long, Kenny.
I know. Well, I may have already got a contraband one, but we'll not talk about that on air. Anyway.
I mean, as far as this, it was great to see Bray Wyatt back. I really enjoyed seeing the Firefly Funhouse. I mean, this is a character that can disappear for 4 weeks and then come back, and it's still as relevant as it was when it left, which just shows the power of this character. And there's so many things that you can do with Bray Wyatt. I mean, in fact, almost anything is possible with his character. And I was not expecting him to turn up at the end as Hawaiian Shirt Bray, you know, as Max Cady Bray. But, I mean, it's an interesting development. And I thought Braun sold it quite effectively. You know, he conveyed surprise, you know, what's going on here? You know, oh, my God, you know, this is the guy that brought me into WWE. I was part of his family. You know, is he going to have more of a hold over me, you know, emotionally and psychologically as this character than he would have done, that he did as, you know, Matalan Jumper Bray or The Fiend. So
Matalan Jumper Bray.
Matalan Jumper Bray, yeah. Or I guess Walmart Jumper if you're in America. But I mean, it's just like, I mean, it was an interesting twist that I didn't see coming. And I think, yeah, it will lead to a match at Extreme Rules. Doesn't really feel like the story is going to end with this. To me, it feels like the story ends with Braun versus The Fiend. So I think it's a very interesting way of prolonging this story and keeping it interesting by, you know, tacking on this, you know, added part to it, this, you know, peripheral, you know, this, it's almost like a hard drive, tacking on this hard drive to your computer that's giving you all this extra power, you know, that you're not expecting. But still, you know, there's more in the tank after that, you know, because ultimately it's, you've got to figure it's going to be Braun versus The Fiend. You know, that's the big one. But this is interesting in itself. So yeah, looking forward to seeing which way they take this and what they do with it. It opens up a lot of possibilities, I would say. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I really liked it because it makes sense that Swamp Bray would come back because he's the guy that brought Braun into WWE. And it does seem like this is all building to SummerSlam with The Fiend and Braun. I've got to say, The Fiend to me is 10,000 times a more interesting character than Braun Strowman is. So the more that he's involved, the more interesting it is to watch Braun. So, and Braun, please go back to your old hairstyle ASAP. Please, dear Lord, from the nip slip to the Strowman Express to the mullet, it's like he's auditioning for Southpaw Regional Wrestling again or something. Like, it's, I don't know what he's on.
Hey, at least his car windscreen wasn't smashed in this week.
That's true. He managed to go 1 week without his car getting smashed up. I actually thought that Raw was a pretty killer episode this week. We had a lot of good stuff on Raw, we opened up with, it's not the most original thing in the world, but we got Drew McIntyre basically wanting a new challenge. We got Dolph Ziggler coming out. He said that AJ had been traded to SmackDown, so Ziggler and Robert Roode had been traded to Raw, and then they kind of talk about their past. Ziggler talks about, you know, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be where you are right now, and it's going to lead to a title match at Extreme Rules with McIntyre and Ziggler. I know that obviously usually we would say any title match involving Ziggler would make you want to bang your head against the wall. Is this any more attractive a proposition because there's a story behind it with the two of them or not?
I mean, I suppose it is. No, I think it can be. You know, I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but it could be if WWE made it more interesting. And I think they will, because as you said, this was like a loaded episode. Championship Monday, it was billed as. So, I mean, this was a power-packed episode. There was almost no filler at all. I mean, all this was like heavyweight content. I mean, I was not expecting this Dolph to come out, and because he's basically been, I mean, he's been like the third man in a...
Sonya's, you know, sidekick.
Yeah, he has had no real role for months and months and months. He's been there making up the numbers. You know, I was going to say, like, that he would be the third man of a team in a six-man match, and he would be a designated jobber each time. So, I mean, he has been a guy without a purpose for a very long time. So it was surprising to see him come out and interrupt Drew McIntyre, and then for Drew to immediately offer him a title match at Extreme Rules after he had requested it. So I was not expecting that at all. I mean, they can certainly have a good match, and I think they can make it interesting. I mean, Dolph now is on a different brand. He's going to be motivated to go out there and really put something together. But I mean, he's always been a guy who could do that. You know, these two worked together many times previously, so they're going to be able to have a good match. Whether it's really going to enhance Drew's title reign is another matter. I kind of felt like there was more mileage in the Lashley feud, and maybe they're going to go back to that later, but I think I would have preferred to see Drew and Lashley do some type of gimmick match at Extreme Rules.
Is the idea behind not continuing Lashley and Drew, they don't want to just have Lashley lose to Drew multiple times? Is that maybe the idea behind it more?
Well, I guess so. But I mean, as we know, the Backlash match, it had an excuse finish. You know, Lana came out. We'll be talking about her a little bit later.
Can't wait.
Try and control my language this week, Kenny. But Lashley had, it was an excuse finish. You know, it was not a clean pin at Backlash when Drew pinned Lashley. So there was, to me, more mileage in that feud. There was definitely much more they could do with it. So I don't really understand. It's maybe they're kind of pausing it. Maybe, you know, because as I'm sure you'll have seen on the news, Kenny, Donald Trump held a rally in Oklahoma with people in attendance. And I thought, wow, I didn't think that was supposed to happen. So now that's happened. Does that increase the likelihood that people will be, or more people will be admitted to wrestling events? What did you think about that? That must have crossed your mind when you saw that.
Yeah, no, I think we probably are moving to a phase where there's going to be more fans at shows. But I think the problem, if you look at America as a whole right now, that, you know, I think it was the other day, Florida had 4,000 new cases in a day.
Oh, there's loads of news cases out there. I couldn't believe it when I saw it on the news.
I think what's probably going to happen is America will start to get crowds in, and then they are inevitably going to get a second wave and have to go into full lockdown again. I think that's going to be what happens. So I think that probably, you know, Drew might get one pay-per-view where he gets to stand tall as champion, and then it'll be back to the PC.
Yeah. I mean, they're better off really not doing that at all, aren't they?
The vaccine seems to be what everybody's hoping for. Is that if we get that then people can start to go back to events. But I mean, I've got to say, you know, even having people round ringside on Raw has made the show a lot better to watch.
Yes, absolutely.
It's much easier to watch.
But my point being about the pause in the Lashley-McIntyre hostilities, do you think that maybe they're putting on hold because the reason I bring the Trump thing up as well is because they think possibly by August or September they will be allowed to admit thousands of people to a live event?
It's possible, yeah. Because WWE were looking for another, because I think Massachusetts and Boston specifically have said that they're not going to allow SummerSlam to go ahead in the TD Garden. So I think they're looking for a state where they could get fans into an arena for a show. That might be it. They might want to just hold it off and have Lashley kind of demolish some other people and come back to it. Ziggler might just be a placeholder.
Well, I mean, he obviously is. I mean, it's not like Dolph's going to win the title, is he?
Can you imagine? Oh my God.
You know, so, I mean, on one hand, it could be, I mean, I'm sure it'd be a good match and maybe they can come up with a story that's engaging, but it's just simply not believable that Ziggler is going to dethrone Drew McIntyre. So, I mean, he's got as much chance of beating Drew as Miz and Morrison had of defeating Braun Strowman. So it almost does feel like a filler match and just to give Drew something to do before everything restarts again. But we don't know when that's going to be, as you just said. It's like it could be another 4 months or 5 months. It could be next year. We've got no idea at this point. So I think in some ways, I think WWE needs to just carry on regardless. And I think they really should be going all out to give us the big matches now with no fans present to try and maintain those, you know, WWE network numbers. It's going to be very interesting to see those WWE network numbers next month, Kenny, when they put out their second quarter earnings report.
Yep.
It's going to be fascinating to see how many people have stuck with them. I mean, I guess in theory, you would think that more people would have signed up because we've all got lots of time on our hands. But maybe people in America, because the furlough scheme out there is very different from ours, maybe people have had to make loads and loads of cutbacks, and WWE Network has been one of the first things that they've cancelled.
The ratings, if the ratings have gone down, it doesn't spell great news for the network numbers.
Does not bode well at all, absolutely.
Which is funny, because if you look at a lot of David McCutcheon, one of ITR's own, obviously he had put a thing on Twitter, which I thought was really interesting, actually, where he talked about how, you know, pretty much everything else is up right now. You know, Netflix is up, Amazon Prime's up, but wrestling does seem to be down right now. So I just think, I think that the live element being so different really is taking a toll on the audience watching it. And I think that's something which you can't really, I know they've, you know, AEW and WWE have tried in different ways to make up for it with cinematic stuff, with wrestlers at ringside. But I think that not being in an arena with live thousands of fans has definitely affected popularity.
Yeah, absolutely. I should just mention, actually, I've been catching up with my Impacts. I'm still always a few weeks behind. The May 26th Impact, that had a match shot at the Dina compound between the North and Cody Dina and one of his one of Cody's relatives. That actually was a barrel of laughs, I've got to say, Kenny.
Who's Cody Dina?
Well, Cody Dina is a guy that actually worked there first, I think it was 2009. He was ODB's boyfriend, I think, at the time. And then when Eric Bischoff and Hogan came in, they got rid of him very quickly after they arrived. And they brought him back, I think it was in 2018. And he's like a redneck character, but it's, you know, it's a comedy character, but he's really good at it. I mean, he's really been, there's some really funny stuff there with just him sending himself up and sending up the Undertaker and all sorts of other crazy stuff. But yeah, they had a match, the North, who were the Impact Tag Team Champions. They had a match with the Deaners at the Dina compound. It was fought in a barn where they'd set a ring up. Then it was outside the barn, onto the grass, into an articulated lorry trailer, through a panel fence, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff going on. So, I mean, even Impact has got in on the act. I just thought I would throw that in, Kenny.
Everybody's got, you've got to try things out during this rough time.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely a fun match, absolutely in the spirit of the cinematic things with all the mood music, you know, and the jerky camera work and all the, you know, the silly stuff that goes on. But, you know, it wasn't a main event. It was meant to be a fun match, and that's exactly what it was.
Also on Raw, though, we had, I thought the women's stuff was great. We had Nia Jax basically wanting to... Nia Jax is not happy. She comes out, she wants to she's complained about Charlotte Flair getting a title shot when, you know, obviously what happened to her. Charlotte ends up coming out later on.
This is what Nia said to Charlotte Flair: "We all know that you get what you want because your daddy's Ric Flair." Nia Jax charging someone with nepotism, can you believe it? I can't believe it.
And then Flair and Nia have a pretty good interaction back and forth, and then they end up brawling. They get pulled apart. Flair's got an arm injury from that, and that kind of led into the match with Asuka and Charlotte, where the arm played a part in the match, and then Asuka made Charlotte Flair tap with the Asuka lock, clean submission win, just under 12 minutes. And later on, Nia would attack Charlotte again. Charlotte's, in reality, actually going to be out for about 2 months. She's away to get surgery of some kind. So this was a way to write her out. But I thought the Asuka finally getting that clean win over Charlotte Flair in a match was a big deal. And I thought Nia played her part pretty well here. So I thought the women's stuff on the show was pretty fun. What did you make to it?
Yeah, really good. I enjoyed the Nia Jax and Charlotte stuff. I thought that was well done. And, you know, as you said, Nia and Charlotte, the pull apart, Charlotte's there. We thought at first it was her arm, but I think it was a left shoulder that was injured, and she came out with the tape. And then Charlotte and Asuka had the match, and Asuka forced Charlotte to tap to the Asuka lock. What I liked about this is that Charlotte basically never sells anything. After she lost the NXT women's title, she just didn't sell it at all. And I remember being quite, you know, upset by that and just thinking, well, you could have really sold the significance of that loss instead of, you know, wandering around like you walk on water still and you're the greatest thing ever. And I think, you know, you need to show a little bit of vulnerability as is Charlotte a heel or a babyface? Sometimes I find it hard to work it out. I mean, I guess she's a tweener, but I mean, you know, certainly as a heel and definitely as a babyface as well. I think you need to show that a loss has affected you in some way. And she wasn't doing that. And she did do it here after she was forced to tap out to Asuka's Asuka lock. And she really sold the significance of that loss, really conveyed, you know, she was distraught that she'd tapped out and been beaten. You know, it probably wasn't too difficult for her to find those emotions, since, as you said, she's just about to undergo, I think she's going to undergo surgery, did you say? I think she is, isn't she?
Yes, yeah, I don't know what the surgery is, but she's going on, she's undergoing surgery. She might be back for SummerSlam, but it depends.
Right, okay. So, I mean, it's not going to be difficult for her really to convey that emotion, you know, that she's, you know, she's in a bad way, she's upset, she's, you know, she's very disappointed because she's not only just done a submission job, but she's about to go under the knife and be out for 2 months. I think a break from TV, even though I'm obviously, you know, not pleased that, you know, you don't want anyone to be injured, but sometimes I think it's good for people to disappear from TV. And I think Charlotte was on the verge of just, we'd seen too much of her. You know, she was, some weeks we were seeing her on all three programs. And I think there was a lot of resentment towards her. You're aware of this, Kenny. There was quite a bit of resentment towards her that it was Charlotte this. She was just shoved down our throats. So I think her taking a little bit of time off, regardless of the reasons, I think would be good for her career long term.
I thought the stuff was fun. And then, you know,
really enjoyed the match.
And later on, you know, Sasha and Bayley would defeat the Iconics in a tag title match. And then post-match, I thought this was so well done. Sasha Banks basically says that she's getting jealous of Bayley having two belts and she wants a title match, and says, Extreme Rules, I'm officially challenging. And then turns and says, Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. It was so well done. Asuka comes out and accepts. They end up fighting. Sasha's got Asuka in the bank statement, and we're now going to get Asuka and Sasha Banks at Extreme Rules. And I'm here for it. I thought this was really good, really strong stuff. And Asuka and Sasha, they had a great match on Raw a couple of years ago, I think the lead up to WrestleMania, the year that Asuka was facing Charlotte. I think Asuka had won the Rumble. And I remember there was this really good camera shot where Sasha had lost and she had like a single tear coming down her face.
Oh, yeah, I remember, yeah.
Because this was like her last chance to get to WrestleMania. So they've worked really well together before. So I'm pretty excited about the match. How are you? Is it a match that you're looking forward to seeing?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the post-match angle. And, you know, Bayley's like, you know, what do you mean? You know, you want two belts? You know, we think, is she going to? Because that's what we know. That's the direction of travel. We've said this before. Everyone knows this. It's all been, you know, very well written and very well acted and very well played by, you know, let's give Sasha and Bayley it. Let's make this the Sasha and Bayley show. You know, let's, you know, these two are just like,
they're killing it.
They're on fire right now. And, you know, it just shows you, doesn't it, what happens when you're confident and you believe in your characters and you've got the booking team, or the writing team behind you, and they're giving you material that works and you know it's clicking. And it's, you know, what's even better about this is there's no fans present, but they know it's working. You know, if this was going on in front of fans right now, this would be probably viewed as one of the best female storylines ever in WWE. I think it probably would be. Because generally they don't last this long. I mean, it's, you know, really well done this. Certainly much better than, you know, Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey, which was, you know, the big one from last year, wasn't it? So, I mean, it was just like, this has been so well played out by Banks and Bayley. Yeah, it was like, is Banks going to challenge Bayley? No, I'm going to challenge Asuka. And Asuka comes out and she accepts. And she was really fun as well. And all these characters are really over right now. And that's amazing about Bayley, Sasha and Asuka, is I would say all three of these are currently, you know, I don't think either of them has peaked. I think they're still on the escalator upwards in terms of what they can do in this company. You might say that, you know, when Sasha was having a feud with Charlotte a few years back, you know, when they were headlining Raw and they had the Hell in a Cell match, you could say, well, Sasha was a bigger star then. Well, possibly she was. But I think now as an overall all-round performer, I think she's better than she's ever been. You look at all the stuff she's been doing with Bayley and what she's expected to do and what, you know, the whole thing's so great. I mean, because like... it was SmackDown, wasn't it? Where Bayley and SmackDown.
They were on commentary.
They were on commentary, and then Nikki Cross runs out and attacks Bayley and Sasha Banks at ringside, and that was hilarious. Just watching Bayley and Sasha self and Nikki Cross and just throw themselves around. I don't know. It just cracked me up. And then, you know, Nikki's turned into like. She's turned into unhinged Nikki again. And like, she's like, come on, Sasha, you know, I want some action, I want to fight. And then Bayley volunteers Sasha to have a match without asking her again. And then Sasha's there, she's selling like no surprise, you know, and she's all like disorientated after Nikki's running. And then Bailey once again is volunteering her for a match she doesn't want. And she's got to sell like, you know, annoyance again with her tag team partner and then getting on with the match. And she ends up winning the match. And there's a lot of stuff going on here right now that's kind of unpredictable. And I'm hoping they're going to be sharp enough to keep changing it around, because the way that was set up on SmackDown, it kind of did make you think that Nikki was going to score the win there, didn't it? That was what we were meant to think.
Yeah,
that exactly. Nikki had, you know, she was wanting the match. Sasha didn't want the match. She'd been volunteered for the match by Bayley, and she was kind of on the back foot, so she would lose. But instead, she ended up winning. It was actually a clean pin as well. So you're just like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. So there's all sorts of stuff going on right now with Sasha and Bayley. They're doing so many different things at once. And this, to me, is why this act right now is absolutely the best thing in WWE. I don't think there's anything in AEW that's half as good as this, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I just think they're tremendous. I'd like to say also that I thought it was tremendous. Really pleased that the Iconics lost this match to Sasha Banks and Bayley. And also that Billie Kay had very limited involvement in the match. She was knocked out of the ring just before the finish, which they showed on replay, and it looked even worse on replay than it did the first time around. Banks forced Peyton Royce to submit. So hopefully that's it for the Iconics. The end. No more title matches, please.
Yeah, just no more. We should mention as well, Edge cut a really good promo on Randy Orton about what happened with Christian, that he's going to bring back the Rated R Superstar. And then Randy Orton, Ric Flair's bringing it Randy Orton to call him the greatest ever. And out comes the Big Show. We are going to get the Big Show versus Randy Orton again in 2020, Finn. Are you excited?
Oh, my God. So Big Show turns up backstage. He's all sweaty. Why was he all sweaty?
No, he's not done anything.
I don't want to think about what he was doing backstage to get that smell. And so, of course, he has to make a reference to the Big Show show. And then
critically acclaimed Netflix phenomenon.
Didn't spend too long in the top 10, I noticed. So, yeah, Ric Flair's out there and calls Randy Orton referred to him as the best performer in the history of WWE. You know, Ric was like, you know, sometimes it's watching Rick or listening to Rick do promos these days. Sometimes it can be quite difficult to listen to him, knowing how good he used to be. But I thought he did a pretty good job here. You know, Orton was out. He really laid on thick about, you know, just stating it's the voices in his head that's the reason he's so conflicted right now. Big Show comes out. He called Orton a narcissistic parasite. You know, Orton didn't want to face Show. Show's ready for a rumble right there. Orton backs, you know, he retreats from the ring. And as you say, it looks like it's going to be Extreme Rules for the match, doesn't it?
I mean, like, we saw the match, when was it? I think they had a match Extreme Rules 2013. They had the headline Survivor Series 2013. Yeah. It's just never ending.
I mean, there was some humour in here with Orton saying that he admired Show's long list of accomplishments in WWE. I mean, that was just so funny.
I do very quickly, just because I thought this would be worthwhile. Just very quickly, okay? So, you know, the Big Show. Now, I feel like somehow people have been, like, coerced into liking this sitcom. Because I've just looked up on Google here about the Big Show show. Can I just read you the top two reviews?
Please do.
This is from Aesop Sarma Bordoloi. He says, WWE was a big part of me growing up in 2000s here in India, and the Big Show being one of my favourites. So this show was so refreshing and funny and such a hook. My favourite wrestlers almost in their twilight. It is amazing to still be able to catch them on TV, eagerly awaiting season two and many more. There can be some great storylines. All the actors were amazing. JJ, Mandy, and Lola, and Cassie. Also was over the moon to see Mark Henry, Mick Foley, and Rikishi on one of the episodes. Three people found that review helpful. They should all get help. But the other one, from Kelly Wentworth, she says, I thought this was going to be one of those super annoying eye-rolling shows. My niece really wanted to watch it, and my sister, a huge wrestling fan, also recommended it. So I did. I was so pleasantly surprised. It's definitely on the lighter side. No shit, Sherlock. And the writing is actually good. I appreciate the acting and the humour. I like the characters and look forward to another episode. The evil genius younger sister is the best. Not only is The Big Show in it, but so is Alison Munn, Jaleel White, Asif Ali, Ben Giroux, and Jamie Moyer. Looking forward to more of this, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
Well, you know what, Kenny? I'm pleased that they enjoyed it. You know, and everyone has a right to enjoy whatever they want to watch on Netflix. You know, I'm happy for them. Now let's move on from The Big Show show.
And then the main event segment of Raw, we had Dominik and Rey Mysterio out because Rey Mysterio's finally made his big return. Yeah. And it all breaks down into basically Dominik almost getting his eye shattered off the ring steps, but we get a save from Aleister Black and Humberto Carrillo. I thought it was a pretty hot final angle, though, and I think that they're continuing to make this kind of Rollins and his messiahs against the babyfaces, including the Mysterios, a pretty compelling storyline.
I didn't really think too much to it.
What is it you're not liking?
I don't know. It's just like, well, it was fairly obvious that they weren't going to ram Dominic's eye into the stairs, and I'm glad they didn't do. And it's just like, I mean, Austin Theory is not very exciting. Neither is Murphy. They need to do something with these characters. This whole Monday Night Messiah thing with Seth Rollins almost feels like some sort of rib on him. It really just feels like they're mocking him with this. And we just need, this act just needs to, there needs more depth. We need to know more about who they are. I still don't really understand this Seth Rollins character. You know, I have no idea who he is, why he's like this, why Murphy and Austin Theory are drawn to him. You know, he's not really a charismatic or magnetic cult leader. You know, I mean, I've said that the outcome I want from this is Dominik joining Team Rollins. But I can't really see why Dominik would do that, because what does Rollins really have to offer him?
Well, we're going to see a big tag match with Rey and Dominik against Rollins and, say, Murphy, and then the heels get the win, and Rollins can then offer Dominik, you know, the winning ways.
Well, I mean, possibly. I mean, there is that. We're not there yet. I'm talking about what we've seen so far, what's actual, not what's potential. And what's actual so far has not been enthralling. I just don't think it's very exciting. And I just think there's so much they could do with it. I don't even really understand why Rollins does these things. I think we need more of an explanation for why he is like this. I mean, you know, maybe bringing the Authors of Pain back, maybe that would really, you know, crank up the menace, you know, because I don't think they're very menacing. I'm just not afraid of them, Kenny. You know, that's the problem. They just seem like kind of quite dull.
The Authors of Pain definitely are more interesting than Murphy and Theory. So
yeah, it just seems, you know, kind of uninteresting to me. And for the main event segment and for the amount of effort they put into this, I just think it should have sparkled a lot more than it did. I think what we need to get a Mysterio Rollins in a match. I think if those two can really have a match, and all the other players can somehow enhance it and enrich it, then I think we might have something. But we need like a real grudge match between them, which we're may well going to get at Extreme Rules. Hopefully we will. And something will happen there that's really going to take this to a higher plateau. Because right now it just feels to me to be nowhere near as good as it should be for something that's in the main event spot. And as I say, I want Dominik to join forces with Rollins, but what does Rollins really have, you know, to entice Dominik to join his squad? You know, what are they going to do? Like, hang out in the gym and drink bottled water? I mean, it seems like that's all they ever do. You know, maybe have a protein shake. Oh, we've got these really good protein shakes. Oh, we have such a laugh. You know, whatever. It's something like that. It just doesn't seem like a very, like, if you go back to the Ministry of Darkness, 1999. I mean, that was just completely out there. And I know they can't do a lot of that now because it's PG, not TV-14. But I mean, that was an evil faction, wasn't it, Kenny? I mean,
it was because they made you watch Viscera and the Acolytes wrestle. Talk about evil.
But they were absolute force for bad. They were
in so many ways. They were a force for bad.
They were like, you know, so immoral, and they were just like evil, and every obscene and everything about them was just unethical and unprincipled, and everything. You know, they were just like this real force that was of menace that posed so much threat. And like people were scared of them, and they were like proper villains. But to me, Rollins and Theory and Murphy aren't. And it just seems that the fact that I can't even believe that they really did that to Rey Mysterio. I know it's pro wrestling, and of course, they didn't really do that to Rey Mysterio, but it just doesn't seem to be in keeping with their characters. There's a lot of things about this that are just not clicking for me, Kenny, in a nutshell.
So the Finn Martin stamp of approval is a few weeks away. Well, listen, that is it for us here on the main podcast. We hope that you've enjoyed the podcast, that we've been able to bring you some kind of lighthearted stuff after obviously the serious elements we had at the beginning. And you know, again, you know, I'm sure we speak for everybody that, you know, the best thing we can do right now is listen and read things, and you know, be there for people who need to be able to, you know, express how they feel. Finn, do you have any plugs for this week before we go?
No plugs, Kenny. No.
The only plugs I've got for you is Patreon, where you can get this podcast early and also get an overrun with us and articles and lots of different stuff. And that's what's really keeping us going during coronavirus. So patreon.com/insidetheropes. And you can also go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/insidetheropes, where we have loads of interview content going up all the time. We have two pretty big hitter videos that have just gone up. We put a video up earlier this week of Paul Heyman, of Paul Heyman talking about that shoot promo that he cut on Vince McMahon on the pre-Survivor Series 2001 SmackDown. Get the whole story as to how that promo came around, him delivering it, what Vince said to him backstage. That video has been up for a few days and it's already got over 143,000 hits. And then we've also got a really funny Dustin Rhodes rib story about The Undertaker, I think Finn heard live in person last March. Yeah. So that's up there. Just up last night, already over 35,000 people have listened to that. So lots of good stuff up there. Go check it out. And yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.